Tikkunei Teshuva lecture. We'd like to thank Morenu Harav Lichtenstein for once again agreeing to share words of illumination and inspiration with us in preparation for Aseret Yetzirah and Yom Kippur. To us, Rav Lichtenstein needs no introduction. And thank you very much, Rebbe.
This gadget is a little confining. I hope it won't prove a barrier to whatever I want to say. I must confess, I have a bit of a penchant, I guess some would say a bit of a weakness, for titles which have a bit of a kick. None should be absolutely abstruse, but not totally translucent either. I'm not sure that everyone understood the thrust, the gist. The title was actually selected, a dual title in a sense. But the topic itself, once you get by Plotinus and something else, I think is very, very clear, very central, very relevant to cultural history as a whole, religious history as a whole, and more particularly, of course, to our own world, the world of Eretz Hashem for ourselves. The center of our discussion this evening is the fact that speaking of religious life, we're confronted with something else of an ellipse. The ellipse is two foci. I expect to see likewise, we have twin foci and attempt to relate each of those to the other as though it will become clear in due time. The two elements that I have in mind. On the one hand, the personal, the individual aspect of what spiritual life, what religious life. Taking that to be for most of us, we confront the issue, the center, the critical point, whatever religious life means to us, and to the extent that primarily it means the relationship with the B'nai Shleilam, take that to be the main item. Various elements which we associate with the relationship to the Baruch Shemaim. One point, a kind of interpersonal relationship, whatever form that takes, Ava, Yira, Dveikus, Kabbalas El Malchus Shemaim at one plane, and Kabbalas El Mitzvus at another plane. These are to us the critical, the central elements. And whether the twin elements that I mentioned just previously, the acceptance, the yoke, as it were, of divine hegemony, or the yoke of the performance to the ritual world of Halacha, in either case, we deal with something which presumably manifested primarily in one's personal life, one's personal existence, both in practice and in belief, in more than belief, in passion, in emotion, what makes a person tick spiritually. Whether we're dealing with Krishna, the first parasha of Krishna, Kabbalah Sabach Shemaim, the second parasha of Kabbalah Sabitzvahs, we have a clear sense, the distinction between the first person singular, the second person singular, second person plural notwithstanding. We have a clear sense that we're dealing, if not with one individual, the number of individuals, a mass of individuals, but with that facet, that aspect of their spiritual existence, which relates to them fundamentally, not as part of a group, not as part of a corpus, but as persons. At the very beginning of our spiritual life, we imbibe that through Krishna. As we move on, we are way through the gradations of the world of Halacha, of the Gemara and Makis. We move from the Kabbalah of one sort or another, submission with this sense or that sense, the sense of the crucial element of faith as such. Our world, of course, a world which is saturated, directed by Halacha. And yet the Gemara Makis, with no intent, of course, to delimit or to reduce the demands of Halacha, the scope of Halacha, speaks of a kind of a reduction in conceptual terms, while not in practical ones. The Gemara there says that Tayag Mitzvahs were mentioned to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Cheshire of Tayag was so familiar to us, although it doesn't appear in the Torah anywhere, and it's very marginal in the Chazal as well. The Cheshire the Gemara makes is based on the word Torah, the letter Moshe. Torah is Begimatria 611. Then we heard Moshe Rabbeinu, in the passage which we will read, of course, Sevastera, shortly. And there are two other mitzvahs which we didn't hear from Moshe Rabbeinu, transmitting them from the Meshem to us. But the first two norms, Asasa Dibris, that directly stated to us by the Shleiram, and we have 613. And then, somewhat surprisingly, he goes on to explain how these 613, which have been the basis, the infrastructure, the point of departure from Moshe Rabbeinu, is gradually reduced. And the Gemara presents us with various lists, catechisms, as it were, in Tilim and Nevi'im, which take this corpus of 613 and reduces it to some overarching principles which form the basis of the Tayag. One is 11, one is 6, one is 5, one is 3. And finally, at rock bottom, we have a pasuk in Habakkuk, Yitzhiyahu, Bo Habakkuk, Rabbi Yehuda Halachas, V'Tzadik Be'Emunato Yichya. A virtuous person, a righteous person, lives by faith. It has for us an almost Protestant ring, justification by faith, not justification by works, as it were. But that, of course, is not the intention of the Gemara. Chas v'chalila, the Gemara should attend that our life, which is directed and governed by the operative principles of halacha, should not be governed solely by the overarching principle of faith. But having said that, obviously the Gemara is not without meaning either. It says something about a certain hierarchy, as it were, of values, of aspects of religious life. Life which is lived, even though it then is like an octopus, spreads out in all directions. Life which is lived, grounded in faith. And faith which is not only described as the term emunah, tzadik b'emunah yichyeh, but the pasuk says tzadik b'emunah to yichyeh, his faith. So that we're not sufficient for us, the emphasis is placed in what is clearly a voice of conscience, a voice of Hashem, absorbed, internalized. That being very much a personal element. On top of that, the Pasuk Habakkuk, which most cites, it always speaks of the particular faith which is characteristic, which is endemic to that individual. So in this sense, our interpersonal relation with Dvar Hashem clearly has an internal and inward ring. We have, as Hamlet put it, that within which paths show. It doesn't stop there. We think of religious life as being grounded in some degree of subjective elements. We think not only how we understand and therefore implement demands and directions of halacha, but we think beyond that. How do we relate to the mentioned per se? As persons, as individuals. And of course, Tillim is full of this. But not only Tillim. The emotions which in one sense or another lie at the heart of our experience to the extent that we can of the mentioned Ahava, Yira, Dveikus, everything which leads us to cleave and to cling to Malchus Shamayim, whether we want to be restrained in doing this in line with, let's say, the Goyim's critique of the Baal HaTanya, we dare not, the Goyim would have said, to pretend we are literally clinging. So that's the Gemara. Wait, the bug. We have shown them the baby shrina. Is that feasible? But even if the Gemara then answers to for us, then indeed you cannot cling to shrina. You can't cleave to shrina. But then you do something else, which is a kind of an ersatz clinging. And even the Dveikus Tamid Chachomim is not one which necessarily has an abstract emotional cast. Maybe the daughter of Tamid Chachom enabled Tamid Chachom to sit and learn, acknowledge the authority of Tamid Chachomim. That's the most seed book. Having said that, the sense of the Gemara is those tools, those values, avenues, this instrumental element ושאלו זו זווי את תמיד חכמים ובסנת הבן שלילם in the nether world we find our way, we claw our way as it were to him. But again, it's a subjective feeling, and somewhat analogous to another Gemara. The Gemara says, the Chaim Yamseini, every time the word S appeared in the Torah, it seemed to be superfluous. He would douse his halacha from it. And then one day he learned the pasuk as a shulchan tiyor. And the question is, what could be divided, what could be multiplied, what could be added? Only the shulchan tiyor to be yori ultimately to, of anyone else, is a rezar. But the Bekiva came along and said, the shulchan tiyor, the rabbi is to be the chachomim. But here again, what's understood is that related to Tamid HaChomim, we cling to something which is representative of Baruch Shemayim in this world, and that somehow enables us vicariously, directly, to enter the relationship of Himself, even as we insist with the Goyen, against the Baal HaTanya, we have the right to say that it's being done. We have to maintain a distance between the infinite and the finite. So whether we speak of the emotions as such, the relationship which we strive to form in the context of the emotions, and allowing for the fact that the reciprocal relationship, we relate to the Ben Shlilem, and he in some way, in some sense, which we can neither fully apprehend nor fully apply. That's the relationship that develops a seed book. In this respect, one may not only speak of individuality, but beyond that, the implementation of individuality in word of solitude. A solitude, either the state or solitariness as the emotion, as a feeling which accompanies a state of solitude. With these we're familiar, and we're dealing with a phenomenon which is part of the religious life in general and Jewish life in particular. White had wrote at one point, religion is solitariness, and if you have never been solitary, you have never been religious. And I believe the Rebbe signed on to that, and the latter part of it. But surely, the emphasis of solitariness, a solitude, such as very familiar to many of the Rav, whether those who read his works or those who sat at his feet. And most familiarly, to take another expression drawn from the world of general religious life, quotation which I placed at the beginning of our title this evening, perhaps most famous definitions of religion in history of Western thought, that of Plotinus and the Enneads, who defined religion as the flight of the alone, lowercase a, to the alone, capital A. Let us define first precisely what is the nature of that flight. From a certain point of view, it is perhaps even arguable that maybe we are oversimplifying if we assume that the flight is moving in a particular direction and take the word flight also in a particular sense. The word flight is a noun which relates to two verbs, to fly and to flee. We look back to the original Latin to find out what Plotinus had in mind. And of course you will ask me, well, it is one or the other, can't be both. Can't be both. It certainly can, it certainly does. Only this morning, the Sesliches of Minik Perlin, Sesliches of which the peaceman focus on Pesach Kukuf Abitess and Tilim, which describes the kind of incipient attempt to flee. The presence of Baruch Shemaim is overwhelming. It dominates, it threatens in a certain sense to annihilate. David HaMelech, that Pesach Tehillim, describes that feeling very well. I go here, I go there, ascend to heaven, descend to hell. There's a point to which a person wants to flee. But primarily, I suppose, what I intended, I wanted to flee, I wanted to fly. And why to fly? Why can't you walk? The assumption, of course, is, this is the heart of the Neoplatonic tradition, to get to Baruch Shemaim, to attain progress in the religious life, when he's about to sever himself from the nether world, from this world. That is something which the office was not so much admired. But be that as it may, we had to flee away to fly, and to fly by way of escape, to fly by way of ascent. The focus of our purpose this evening, it's not just the Plotinus' verb, but the subject and the object. Who is flying, who is fleeing, and to whom? And our answer is, of course, who is the alone with the capital A? That's the Benishler. And who is alone in lowercase a? That's not every man, woman, and child. That's someone from a Plotinus perspective, and from the perspective of a great many people in the religious world, and one who is alone by choice, and one who is alone the way romantic poets were alone. He is alone because he regards the world as being, in Wordsworth's well-known sonnet, being too much with us. And when the world is too much with you, maybe the relationship is too little with you, or you're too little with him. all of this, of course, relates to what for many of us intuitively, instinctively, is regarded as the epicenter of the religious life. We get away from all kinds of tildes and tilches and dedicate yourself to seeking, to cleaving the Malchus Shamayim. But from a Jewish perspective, would that justify the second half of Whitehead's statement? If you're never in solitary, you're never religious. Hardly. I don't imagine that Whitehead himself, who was very much a man of this world, lived within it, worked within it. He intended that the whole of life should be spent in solitude. There are such schools of thought, such schools of living, but not of his and not of ours. He wants to have in his item days. Not addressing itself philosophically in terms of the word of thought, the question of how do you relate to solitude and solitary life. But simply, almost dryly, tells you where you may live and where you may not live. And there are 10 different requirements which the Wampi suggests. One of them, you only live in a place where meaning is available. And that seems to be a very minimal requirement. Although some people today seem to have problems with this too. But in any event, what that suggests to us, both in practice and in thought, is a place of tzibur, of community, of society, within our lives, and within our thoughts. And thinking of who we are, and who we want to be, and should want to be. There clearly is another pole, that which has a function within personal life and public life, which counterbalances without obstructing the personal element. Just how that's to be implemented is a matter of discussion on another occasion. And there may, of course, feel that the sense of solitariness is not dependent on how many people are in the room with you. Montaigne, in his essay, Solitude, writes that a person is never more alone than when most alone. But the reality of a public dimension in personal life and religious life, of course, that is central. It's a public square which needs to be furnished, which needs to be nurtured, which needs to be directed. In many respects, it's through the public square that we organize our communal life, and so is a political life. It's the public square that so much of our practical requirements are met. And being within the public square one at the same time is able to satisfy personal spiritual needs and simultaneously bond with others, part of the same community, same, it says the same destiny, similar, if not identical, values. For many, of course, the public square is the national square. In some respects, for us, that may be true. And among other things, we have in mind the Gemara Brachos, Chesed Anoyim, where they have to be a Sabbosin. We say, Nevarech Elokeinu, we have 3, just Nevarech, we have 10, Nevarech Elokeinu. What goes beyond that? We paskin, nothing goes beyond that. You have 10, that's an Eidah of Yisrael, and that by definition is not only a community, but the community. Whether they're 10 or 10,000, is immaterial. So practice does make a difference. And to the extent that we do not relate to the ideal of romantic culture as opposed to neoclassical, romantics liked individualism, they want to be all by themselves, they don't want to be covered by overall society, overall community. To that we don't subscribe. Regardless of how we, what our inclinations are, whether we do or do not write Odes to Solitude, as did Keats, we clearly feel that to be part of a tzibur, and not of any tzibur, but of a particular tzibur, that is something which is critical, central as well in our religious life. And so we need to define our life, describe it, and develop it, not only within the quest of personal salvation as a central personal goal, but with a sense of the value and significance of public communal life, and looking beyond that, to the sense so deeply Jewish, the part of molding ideal personal, individual personality, is itself something which is developed and generated by being able to identify beyond oneself, to transcend the natural egotism, natural egocentrism, instincts that we have, and see ourselves fully maintaining our personal individual identity, and that is one axis of our religious life. At the same time, living as part of a community, or the sense of that community being central to our existence. In this respect, we have a sense that somehow being a Jew is different from being a Goy. I don't mean the sense that some of us have. Some people think that Avodas Hashem and Goyim is just a Tzadik Sasser. Avodas Hashem is a Jewish monopoly, our monopoly. We have the word of Halacha, we have so much. And the Goyim have pop culture, they have basketball, that's about it. And that, of course, is not their self-image, nor, if we understand halacha properly, should be our image of what they're all about. We don't always like to learn this, we don't always like to teach it. The bottom line is, there's so many areas which we've got to be central to what the Ovedes Hashem claim have a position and a stake of their own, admittedly, but it's there. Whether you're talking about Talmud Torah, you want to hand the question of Meir to the effect, the Pasuk says, Yaseh Adam Adam V'chayvarim, speaks of Adam in a universal sense, and it doesn't stick right in the previous way, it says Adam. Or Tefillah, Kabbalahs, it could be Kabbalahs not only in his place, venue of worship, you bring the Beis HaMikdash. Just which Kabbalahs and Mechitzat HaNaim, I won't go into that, but the idea itself is there. It could be a Nazir, it could be a Nedarim, and the Mishnah says not it could be a Nedarim, Israel. So the range of avenues of Eretz Hashem in which we take justifiable pride is necessarily our monopoly. But what I think is clearly correct is a sense that while as we perceive it, you can be called and you can daven, you can learn, and according to Pashto Pesukim Ben Yecheskel, obligated to give tzedakah, etc., etc. Not to mention mitzvah b'lod b'chaveri, which the Ramban thinks virtually the whole Chashem Mishpat applies to Goyim as well. But it's clear to us, we don't have a sense that a Frenchman is becoming this as part of his French identity. And here, we speak of an identity, we have a clear sense that being a Frenchman, being a Jew, are qualitatively very different. And even if we address ourselves not to the French, perceived to be a French Revolution, a secular state. Even we speak of the Muslim world, the Christian world, and countries which are clearly directly identified with a certain religious tradition, still we're inclined to view the nation apart and the religious life apart. Even the two are linked, there's an Anglican church in England, which that we're at. For us, the public and the private are inextricably interwoven, both in terms of the point of departure, how it all started for us, and how historically it has continued. Let's look for a moment at the public side of our world of halacha. That which admittedly is less appealing, less attractive, less magnetic than the personal quest for salvation. But there's so much we see the woof and warp of halacha, woof and warp of our world of Ashkofer and Machshover. The absence of which is just absolutely unthinkable. the regimen of Torah mitzvahs has so much which relates to the public square. The division or the enumeration of mitzvahs per se was going in the 2 days. We were accustomed to Rambam's enumeration, by and large, followed by the Chinuch, but the Gaonim had a different division, not just Lavan and Mitzvah, Lavan and Essen, but personal individual mitzvahs, those they call mitzvot, and then the Parshiot areas, whole areas, which devolve upon the tzibur. And those of us who teach Mr. Medrash know how much energy is dedicated to try to define in many cases what is a personal mitzvah, what is gavur, what is a tzibur. Is it a personal mitzvah or a public mitzvah? And many others of similar vein. Admittedly, in terms of the emotional aspect, the passionate aspect of religion, I said before, that has a much more personal visual ring. Hashem Kiyotiro, take one example. Or Pasuk in Akiv, which is the one summer which we have in the Torah. There are summaries in Avim and Tilim, but there is one summary. Ata Yisrael, Ma'asher Kirshei B'imach. Kim Avad Hashem Elokecha, V'lechem Chol Drachav, Ki Lirav, Hashem Elokecha, V'lechem Chol Drachav, V'lechem Chol Drachav, V'lechem Chol Drachav, V'lechem Chol Drachav, Here we have admittedly two successive sukkim, that which I quoted just now, which focuses on that which the Rishon wants of you, is to love, to fear, to imitate, to emulate, although that presumably involves some measure of practical activity. The next passage goes on, speaking of the practical aspect, of mekayim all mitzvahs, chukim v'mishpatim, in detail. But it should be recognized, even as on the one hand we have some sukkim which speak in its voice, a personal, passionate experience, there is a certain division, if you will, almost a dichotomy. With regard to the areas of halacha, which to our mind most clearly involved with the passionate element, and with regard to which there is a division between the personal track and the public track. Take up on us. Kovetz Yachid, Kovetz Sibu. Taniyas, Yachin Sibu. Tfile, Yachin Sibu. throughout, even the strongholds, it were, of the world of individual spiritual life, his recognition of another track. And we're not today to say whether it's higher or lower, what's different. It's all canons, it's all halachas. So there's a kind of interpenetration of the two elements of the world of personal spiritual life on the one hand, and the world of activity in the public dimension on the other. It's not always clear if priority is to be assigned to one or the other, to which is to be assigned. Let's take one example of the world of tefillah. Tefillah, we're accustomed to the fact that it's not with tzibur, and one of the priorities of that with tzibur is to have chazos hashatz. Why about do we have chazos hashatz? One might ask the other, why do you have tzibur lachash? We're up to us to legislate, to organize the world of tefillah. We have the proper current division, or we choose the alternative of all b'lachash or b'tzibu. As you know, there are different traditions. The Sephardi world gives much more room to shliach tzibu than does the Ashkenazi. And the Gemara discussion in varying directions about the need for both. One of the Gemara says that to extend my brachas, there the Gemara says that why must we have why must we have tefillah b'lachash? Person is having loudly, then a person would know the misgivings, the sins, would be exposed to the dialectical relationship of his fellow to the Ben Shleilam, and that is where it's too private and too individual to bear invasion. Why not for that? It would appear for the Gemara. I'll go with that. And the Gemara Shoshana asks, why do we have Shiach Tzibu? What is Chazal Shiach? And the answer given is the quote of Gamliel, Chazas Mimaitzi Amaratzim, don't know how to daven, Chazas Mimaitzi them. The question given here is, if I've been to Adavin, I've been to Chazos HaShatz. I guess for us, the ready answer would be, we need to have both Tfilim and Tzibur, Tfilim and Tzayachid, because they address themselves different needs and different goals. First of the private world was the encounter with Ben Shleilam, which is purely personal. And then there's one who's got involved in the engagement as part of community. There's a different tone, a different flavor, a different experience. So you need both. That seems to be the message of neither sugya. But the Baratanya, the Kuta Tere, explain the phenomenon this way. You need both to lay different dimensions of spiritual and religious life. Listen to penetration of the public square, of the personal by the public, or vice versa. That can be viewed at two levels. One is, it's part of the infrastructure, the original building, developing, molding of Knesset Yisrael and the world of Teren Halacha. And secondly, subsequent historical developments, critical occasions, moments of crisis, those which occur in the wake of apostasy of one level or another, rather than at the ground floor. There too, the interpretation of the public and the private can be viewed. Speaking about interior, you speak of one vein, Chazal tells you hear another vein. The Torah of Pasuk in Ikiv describes Mount Tabor, Mount Sinai, as Yom HaKahal, the day of the community. That, of course, does not mean that the published community goes into action as if it had been pre-existed, predetermined, and I was drafted in order to popularize, to convince people, in order to give a cast of a particular orientation to Kleistler's community. Himbakol means the day in which the God is formed. It's called its forms, is there in which the identity of a Jew asks the question of his personal conviction. That's the question of his personal convictions, individual predilections. It has to do with his being part of a community, and the absence of that element in effect truncates not only his lifestyle but his basic spiritual identity even as a personal individual. That's one level. Of course, there's much else, even related to the term Yom HaKahal. There's a Gemara in Hiryas, which in dealing with one aspect of the word of Tzibur, delimits and defines what the word of Tzibur is. I spoke before of Kabbalists of Tzibur, and the Kabbalists of Tzibur, inter alia, involve a situation in which the Bezdei Gadol has made a mistake. Most of the Tzibur has followed them in accepting the psak, the erroneous psak, and that Kabbalah needs to be brought either by the Tzibur, by the Bezdei Gadol, or according to the third day of the Gemara, used by both. Here you need to know that the majority has followed the Bezdei Gadol, who has included the census for the purpose of this majority. So Bami says in the Gemara, of course, the pasuk back this up. Only those who live in Eretz Yisrael a defined part of that community, of that kohol, which is relevant, which is counted, for the purpose of knowing whether the majority is believer or not. This has certain implications, which I suppose some of us will find very difficult to digest. Maybe Zionists, we may live here, but we certainly don't want to cast out everybody who does not live here. But there you have it. Ati dekach, the identification of kol, and sibu, with one aspect of the spiritual life, doing penance for a capital sin, and that's defined by the community which is involved and committed to public square, and not just the private sphere. Now this in turn has another application. As the Kaiser Rebbein, what one gives is a lozer, one gives is a bozer. And depending on which use it is, the Rebbein may be different. The Rebbein may be a sword that you have in a bank, where someone is responsible for adopting you, to extend responsibility for your debt in case you don't pay. And the Rebbein does the commingling, which means something else. But in either case, you have the interpenetration of the public by the private, and the private by the public. And incidentally, the Gemara Sanhedrin of Mem Gimel, and Chayes Netanoim, we have some details of Erebus, but even inside the details, the thrust of that Gemara is that Erebus, with its full force, only applied once Knesset Yisrael entered Eretz Yisrael. Prior to that, if it applied at all, marginally. And the Mal explains this has to do with the nature of the identity of Kohol. Harev was the first name of Kohol. Prior to that, Eretz Yisrael, the Kohol was only second and third rate in standing. It fully became called upon to touch the soil, and the Rebbe should also apply much more fully. If you want to look at the significance of the public square in religious life, there are two Mishnayos and Novos which explain to us what are the foundations, morally, spiritually, presumably, upon which the world rests. And two Mishnayos, Shloshet V'Olam Omed, adjacent Mishnayos, not adjacent, but first to St. Perak. One Mishnah speaks of the Torah of David Mut Chesedim, that speaks of Din, Hermet, and Shalom. Common that I'm here in the sense of both, is to both relate, not necessarily to the passional quest for salvation at a personal plane, both relate to the spiritual foundations of our existence in a world within which public values are central, even if they're applied with the personal square. Emes, Din, and Sholem always by definition seem to be the public values. Maybe not truth, but Din and Sholem presumably. And yet the world which is sustained by the proper observance is not just a public world, but the private world goes away to the Ramabu. The public values sustain the private world as well. And the Mishnah Tavim is Chassadim, of course, is somewhat different, depending on how one defines those terms. Among the various elements which are public and yet can be private, or vice versa, Torah is one of them. The Gemara Megillah, the Halacha, is very stringent, very sharp, very critical. If for any reason Talmud Torah the Rabbi was suspended, Talmud Torah the Yochid, that's less demanding. Avodah likewise, in one sense, refers to Beis Mikdash, that's the public square. In another sense, Pesukim Lavid, Eisis Avid, refers to the whole range of Shmiras HaMitzvot, the whole range of Avodas Hashem. So depending on how one interprets that, certainly the word is Chasodim, which is interpersonal, but not necessarily public. There's a public dimension, you build a hospital. There's a private dimension of Rakhach Hurler. So here again, the engagement, the involvement of the two is there. That's not to suggest that there was a describe at the outset the instinctive perception of the passional, the salvific, the world of love and fear, etc., etc., that seems to us to be more attractive, more profound, more meaningful, more ultimate, closer to Mishnah Ben Shalom than Emerson Dean and Shalom sitting handing out traffic tickets. But it's important for us to remember at the same time, coming back to Whitehead's statement, indeed, you need to be solitary at some points, but that doesn't mean that you need to be solitary at all points. I had a math teacher many years ago who explained a theorem would say, when I say any point, I mean every point. It's true in mathematics, it certainly is not true in civic and moral life. So there certainly is room both for assuming there's essential supremacy, if you will, the experiential primacy of the passional life, and yet recognizing the indispensability of the public life. Externalism may seem to be in comparison with the private. If we ask ourselves, what does a person look for? What does he earn in the respective tracks? Presumably that which a person aims to attain is different. It's perhaps here that the kind of qualitative inferiority which we ascribe to the public life comes into feeling. Ask ourselves, what does the person look for? There's something personal, something private, individual for you. And what does the person mean by that? Well, one might say, let's be generous. He's not looking for individuality, to be different, to play center court. He's looking for that as part of his experience. If there are a billion or two other people have the same experience, he doesn't mind. Is that true? Probably it's not wholly true in either direction. But it says, we read it to Shabbos, Hashem badal yadchenu v'ini mo yadechal. The Pashat of the Shadim, the Pashat says that the Pashat leads him alone and there is no other deity with him. Who is alone? The Pashat is alone. He manages to run our lives all by himself. Or the person whose life is being run is alone. I would imagine that most people would much prefer Hashem Bada Yanchenu. He's got to be Hashem all to himself. Maybe it's not fair, maybe it's not moral. And this is reversible to another direction. We speak of love. There's a possessive love, which what I get, what I have. If it's a submissive love, that which I give, the person which I submit. And presumably, the word of Abbas Hashem, we speak of both. We want to, quote unquote, have the Ben Shleilim, and the person wants to have his wife. And what out of our love, a filetis nafshecha, to give to the Ben Shleilim. As I said before, that the Bada Yadchenu, the sense of being alone, is something which a person aspires to ultimately, even though he knows it's impracticable. Much of the same can be said where a person is not giving, but receiving. One of Dovid Shalom's poems, he writes to the effect that what Mad Diaghilev wrote about Nijinsky is true of the human race. We don't want just to be loved, we want to be loved alone. We don't want the relationship of any other paramours, we just want to want us. That's a natural desire. And what we want is a sense of kind of solitude. He's alone, we are alone. Yichud. Is that a Jew sense? Is that what we want? Is that what we ought to want? Of course not. Maybe it's natural. But if we have to give something to the goyim, let's leave that for them. From our point of view, Pesukim which speaks about Hashem etchem, Pesukim by Tzchanam which explains why Hashem chose us for reasons, and there are two reasons which are given. One, because Hashem is bound by a commitment which he made to the Oveis, and secondly, because he loves us. About Hashem etchem, etchem in the plural. And a person wants to be loved alone, as so many in the mystical world will do, that is not Jewish, and from a Jewish standpoint, that is not moral. So as much a person seeks companionship, he wants to be shleilim, proximity, security, all of that is there, the question of all that is legitimate. Chas v'sholem, that our religious world, our Jewish world, should be delimited solely by those selfish desires even if you want something good, it can be contaminated by being selfish. You want to learn, but you want nobody else in yeshiva should learn as well as you do, so you can stand out as Shed Fa'anilui. That is not Tehillah Lishma. So we speak what Jewish identity is all about, what Jewish existence is all about. We need to rest our case about two poles. Both that aspect, a personal, individual, passional experience, the quest for Baruch Shema, the quest for Baruch Shalom. That was just so graphically described in David HaMelech, in some of the poem in Samech Tehillim, and elsewhere. On the other hand, the structuring, the organizing, the suffusing of a life, all of life, with meaning and purpose and value, with moral content, spiritual content, that no less significant than the flight of the alone to the alone. As Jews, we need to value both, to seek both, and look beyond that, not as value to seek, but to see to it that the two are interrelated, interpenetrated. All of this is true. I said at the outset, the point to which Taylor was given, formulated, defined, as Chazal say, singular, there you have it. The experience of Mamre Sinai, singular, climacteric in history, and yet the selfish element somehow filtered out. Once we went to the road, then two things become possible. First, the possibility that having been born into a world as a nation, into a world of value and of meaning and of selflessness, we lose something of that. Your identity becomes jaded, and jaded or not, perhaps the contrary, if our identity is not jaded, the possibility that sin will creep in a collective plane. Chazal, of course, knew the phenomenon of collective sin, and not only through the world of Halacha, is narrowly defined. The Midrash would speak of the Ababos was the Apologa. Why the Ababos wiped out, the Apologa was not. The sins of the Apologa are greater than the sins of the Ababos. The Chazal understood that they rebelled against the Baruch Shemayim. The Ababos only rebelled against social norms. The answer given in the Midrashim is the chet of the Ababel, an accumulation of many individual personal chetoyim. So these were all piled up one to the other. And besides the fact that they were not violating basic moral law, moral norms, those who are not maintaining their personal identity, and selfishness is the order of the day. The Apologa was united, United sin. At a certain point, perspective, of course, if you have a community which is affected by sin, it's more dangerous than the community in which people are sin personally. Qualitatively speaking, that's a more dangerous element. But let's watch a few things from the other perspective. So this prospect of collective sin, then we ask ourselves, to what extent is our world of halacha that we stand on two legs, structured, organized, at ground root, grassroots level, in order to cope with that? The answer, of course, is we have the tools. Sometimes it takes a while, a millennium or two, to be there to play. But the tools are there. Because if we live in a spiritual world, which the fundamental spiritual reality of ours as a nation, and not simply nations, other nations, which have a geopolitical base, onto which is grafted a cultural base. For the culture and the geopolitical element are two faces of the same coin. If we have that, that on the one hand provides the opportunity for collective sin and for collective redemption. The collective sin, you don't have to go very far to find it. One of the most tragic parts of the tale, Rabbi Shabbat predicts it. I know what's coming. I built you as a nation, organized you, structured you, developed you. I want to see the fruit. Collective sin, since strengthened, reinforced by social unity. You don't need to look a few more pages in Sefer Yeshua. I wonder what happens there. Later on, if we're able to make our way through Sefer Shmuel to get to Melachim, just get a little bit beyond David and Melach and Shlomo is a bit problematic already. What do you have the rest of Sefer Melach? And then you have the public square represented by governments, in effect molding the fabric of the nation at the most intimate level of reality. I mean, so it's the most personal choice a person can make. And Ben Shem HaMizrachal, they determine if someone's sitting in Whitehall or the equivalent. And indeed, much of what we have know about Baislishan is very dejecting, very sad, very tragic. But at the same time, awareness of our national constituency, we have the capacity, the infrastructure, in the wake of collective chet, for collective tshuva. Tshuva, I've always been very personal. very personal. And particularly that aspect of tshuva, which has to do not so much with my external behavior. We have a checklist to see what we've done well, what we've done wrong. In the spirit of Rabbi Yehuda Shalom Tshuva. But we deal with the roots of Chet, its sources. That's one aspect. And that can be collective, or can be very personal. To the extent that we deal with the public square, the activity, the possibility, the prospect of tshuva as a collective endeavor, of course, is there. From a certain point of view, it's something which dafka, democratic society, is more required and more possible. Someone once wrote a book about more particular democratic man to the effect that if you live in a totalitarian society, that's what the government does, not you. That's the government. If you live in a democratic state, the government is you and you and you and you. And then you need tshuva. Everything which the government is your emissary, your representative has been doing. That is one aspect. And here, of course, the element of collective sin, collective unclean experience is there. But where my national identity is properly understood in Jewish terms, then even for the side which has to do with salvific tshuva, the tools are there, the challenge is present, and it can be met. There's one tool in particular which polishes both initially and subsequently comes to the fore. What is the term which is so central to the initial formation, creation, if you will, of Knesset Yisrael as a spiritual community, both in its private and its public aspect? The element of the Ebris. Ebris, I think, is an element which has emerged in Pesukim in many contexts, enables us to attain collective spiritual identity, to achieve collective remorse, collective regeneration, reaffirmation. This is that which serves a dual purpose. On the one hand, there's the infrastructure, the tool, whereby we mold and develop our relationship to Benishleim. This, by definition, is a kind of a reciprocal contract. But if you look at the Pesukim throughout Tanakh, it doesn't quite work that way. In commercial life, so maybe a seller wants to make an offer, the buyer wants to make an offer, and the other responds to the offer which has been made. We never find the bris initiated by human agency to the measure that has to respond. Where does such a breeze, such an offer made? I presume some formulations would be pleasing to him and others not. But you don't find that. And breeze is an instrument used by the Ben Shalom throughout. In order to serve the creative agent in molding, but first and foremost, the public reality, in some context, the private reality. In certain cases, even with formulation may be personal, individual, the Bris envisioned is one which has a public aspect, inasmuch as it's not just for this generation, but to serve as historical and meta-historical in purpose. If we look, for instance, the first Bris mentioned table was that to Noah. We know the two things. Number one, the bris is initiated by the Ben Shalom, man is the recipient, the beneficiary. Number two, it's that the particular signatories to that bris, which are the beneficiaries. Horizontally and vertically, but with regard to the rest of the world at the time of the bris, and with regard to the rest of the world throughout history, this bris is definitive. A world is being created, it's a new marble order after the marble. How do you create that world? Through bris, by the relationship with the heavens of that world. There's the instrument, there's the tool. And while it may include or directly involve, directly engage certain individuals, its scope, all embracing, all encompassing. So we've got Avraham, we've got Bris Miller. Similarly, with regard to Gerus, of course, he said, Mamad Sinai, Shosh Dorim Israeli Bris, the entry into the world of Mount Tabor, as described Chazal, entry to Bris. And there again, the ramifications, not only those who were there, as Yeshua Hashem Nerepo, look to the end of the Torah, Pashat Nitzavim Vayera, which we read recently. There again, the present signatories, but as they stand, they are not in their individual personal capacity, as they stand as part of an organic corpus, one which has a personal present existence, which looks beyond down this historical epoch. In all these cases, partly by way of creating more than the reality of Knesset Yisrael, partly by anticipating future spiritual and public needs, that's what Pashat Nitzavim is all about. Bris is the instrument which in one hand engages the Bais Shalem to do for man, on the other hand submits the human world to the divine world in order to attain legitimate human ends and in order to create the human entity, particularly the Knesset Yisrael, L'Dor L'Doros. Later on, we encounter a similar phenomenon that Yeshua and Sefer Melachim find the Sefer Abris, and that becomes for him the all-important guide. Nachem Yevim by Sheni, similarly. From our point of view, what I think is crucial with regard to the Sefer Abris is that it has another quality above beyond those I mentioned. The duality of the human dichotomy between the public and the private is transcended by the element of bris. A bris which simultaneously charges you with the world of Torah mitzvahs, Kavod Torah mitzvahs, at the same time creates you at that moment as a part of an agency, a social agency, historical or trans-historical, in effect, has fused and interpenetrated the private world, that which is part of the soil, enables you to strive to attain the love of the Ben Shleilim from him to you, from you to him, your year to him, even that does not simply come out to you. We have a single element, a dual purpose, and dual achievement. That the force of bris, is started developed, is started created, and described in various contexts in the Torah, which we thought come up. In our world, created by Brit, by a common understanding of Yochum with the Rosh Lidom, is a world which has many personal identities, but melded, gelling into a collective identity, which enables you to be at one at the same time the subject of public and private demands. It's that which on certain occasions makes our collective chatoim sound much more grievous, but at the same time which lays the groundwork for collective tshuva. Collective tshuva, very sugim, is described. Let's take the Rambam, mention Rambam particularly, because it was he who, less than other Rishonim, was not so charged with a sense of the public dimension of Chet and of Tshuva. Rambam speaks of Chet, it's not the Rabbi Yehuda speaks of Chet, it's not the Mashgichim and the Musarim speak of Chet, it's not the Spencer speaks of Chet. All of those speak of Chet. As Spencer put it, sin close creeping twixt the marrow and the skin. Sin which infected you, crawling all over you, poisoned you. Rambam speaks of Chet as an accident. If it should happen, you usually live a normal life, which it doesn't happen, presumably, but if it should happen that you were in Aveira, so here's what you should do to fix things. It happens to you as an individual, and as an individual event within your individual life. And even that Rambam, this is the way he describes Chet initially, and Tshuva initially, When it comes to Perek Zayin, to speak what Gula is going to be like, Kanevim Kulad Sivola Tshuva, Vayisved Yolinda Levi Tshuva, והבטיח התורה שסוף ישראל לעשות שוב בסוף גלותן This is the Nigori כל פסוקים לדעת ואין This is the Rambam, the least national of our Baruch Shover, speaks of tshuva as a collective enterprise. And as that I repeat, was the element of bris, which is directly molding it. It was there from the beginning. For man tere vatoi, yishma et yishma b'koli, yishma tem et briti, v'yitim l'isgula b'kol ha'amim, ki l'kol ha'aretz. That's a man tere v'selam. And that can be duplicated in many other contexts, where the same theme comes up. Finally, we can think of the role of the interpenetration of public and private identities. Think of a case as bris, divinely, supernally, negotiated, imposed, offered. I can think of tshuva as being engaged in by Klal Yisrael collectively and also personally. The bris, which is endemic to it, being that which charges us doubly. If we come to Yom Kippur, we have to say, what does Yom Kippur stand? The answer, I think, is clear. So before, our bris being a creative and molding agent, both initially at Mamre Sinai and the early days of Rom, etc., and when things are turned out of joint, the mode of repairing them is a recurrence, a reminder, and a reaffirmation, a reconstruction of the personal and public identity which should be generated by the bris. Never ask ourselves, what happens in Yom Kippur? That's Yom Kippur, I think, is clear. Hashanah, we speak much of individual existence, although admittedly there are differences between the various brachas. Malchiyah speaks to the individual, ignores Klal Yisrael almost entirely, shepherds at the other plane, and the Zechenis moves from one to the other, from the personal to the public to the personal. But as much as Rosh Hashanah, which is a personal judgment, both of Amdinus B'Yomer and Rosh Hashanah. Yom Kippur is nobody bowing. Yom Kippur is first and foremost the reenactment of the priests which you had initially with what happened subsequently. Three enactments of various planes. The Ramban speaks even of the accoutrements of Avosir Yom Kippur. Bezot Yivaron al HaKodesh. Ramban says this bezot over here is similar to the bezot of the Bris of Noach. Zot Briti. It's about the mystical formulation of this in several places, and we get lost somewhere along the route. But that element is there. Of course, it's there for good reason. Yom Kippur is the Gemara Midas. What is the Gemara Midas all about? The content is Chesed, Rachman, Chesed, Ramaz, Rav Eshler. How did the Torah itself describe the Gemara Midas? We just read it yesterday. Yineo Enochi Koreit Brit. Neged Kolam Choyah Seniflo. Gemara Midas. This is the instrument of Brit at that point in history, at that point in the development of the world. And once they've been formulated, that remains forever. Consequences, and Yom Kippur, we saw their personal tshuva as individuals. With all that personal dimension of religious life could give us, Ava, Yira, and Dveikus, Michil Stir, Kapav, which we beg, a yearning for me, for once again, confronting or being confronted by the Ben Shalom, all of that is part of it. Chas V'Shalom should be reduced only to the public dimension. But the public dimension is very much there. And it's a pasuk which graphically indicates that. I mentioned before the term kol, that's defined by the Sinai. That was defined the girl who wants to join the kol. That bris, kol, and Yom Kippur, Kippur ba'ado. Azal Peloch, of course, discuss which kapara is for where, which dover is for where. But the thrust of the pasuk is the multi-layered and interpenetrated modes of chet, modes of tshuva, and modes of kapara. And the pasuk of Yom Kippur sets the elements of Kapos, of Kippurim, relates to various elements which find their place, certainly in our world, the world of Halacha, as part of the process of Bris. Dovim, certainly. So Rav Ishtaleach is all mystical, but as the Rabban understood it, it's all something which has to do with Bris in a roundabout way, and Keteris likewise. Each of these may serve an additional purpose, but from our point of view, the purpose is these are elements, integral elements of Kriyas HaBris, of Rav Chaim Ba'ado, Ba'ad Beito, Ba'ad Kogad Yisrael. So Yom Kippur, we engage in soul searching, moral, religious, spiritual, as individuals. We engage in soul searching as part of Knesset Yisrael, of Klal Yisrael. We engage not only in soul searching, but in soul creating. Speaks Please him a martyr, wish him on this day, and uplifted you, you have uplifted him. And then the passage says, Asher Achim Tzavach Hayom, Rashi quotes, Derek Kisavar, that which he quoted also the passage of Krishma, Hayom is given on that day. Yom Kippur is a special day, but not totally special day. If Yom Kippur is the date of Bris, and therefore a recreation, a resurgence, a rehabilitation, it happens in Yom Kippur, if it happens in Yom Kippur, it happens in Yom Tisha, Tes Tisha, and every other day of the year. So the challenge which Jesus placed before us, that which unites and unifies us and our religious halachic world, that which enables us to recreate ourselves in the image of Antir, Shem Yisrael Chayim, that which enable us, but at the same time, to relate ourselves to a newly created and yet to an ancient entity of Kal Yisrael. I am keeping particularly, we like the Kohen Gadol, Mechapa Bado, Rebbe Toba Kal Yisrael. And hopefully every day of the year, we, not just at the Kohen Gadol, engage in Kriyas Shema Bris with Ben Shlomo, Asher Anochi Mitzvecha, Hayom.